call again, dear? Hostler! Hello there! Hostler! My second call echoes through empty space and rouses nobody. Produces, in short, no visible result. I am at the end of my resources. I don't know what to say or what to do next. Here I stand in the solitary inn yard of a strange town with two horses to hold and a lady to take care of. By the way of adding to my responsibilities, it so happens that one of the horses is dead lame and that the lady is my wife. Who am I, you will ask? There is plenty of time to answer that question. Nothing happens, and nobody appears to retrieve us. Let me introduce myself and my wife. I am Percy Fairbank, English gentleman, age, let us say, 40. No profession, moderate politics, middle height, fair complexion, easy character, plenty of money. My wife is a French lady. She was Mademoiselle Clotilde Delorge when I was first presented to her at her father's house in France. I fell in love with her. I really don't know why. It must have been because I was perfectly idle and had nothing else to do at the time. Or it might have been because all my friends said she was the very last woman whom I ought to think of marrying. On the surface, I must own, there is nothing in common between Mrs. Fairbank and me. She is tall, she is dark, she is nervous, excitable, romantic. In all her opinions, she proceeds to extremes. What could such a woman see in me? What could I see in her? I know no more than you do. In some mysterious manner, we exactly suit each other. We have been man and wife for 10 years, and our only regret is that we have no children. I don't know what you may think. I call that, upon the whole, a happy marriage. So much for ourselves. The next question is, what has brought us into the inn yard? And why am I obliged to turn groom and hold the horses? We live for the most part in France, at the country house in which my wife and I first met. Occasionally, by way of variety, we pay visits to my friends in England. We are paying one of those visits now. Our host is an old college friend of mine, possessed of a fine estate in Somersetshire, and we have arrived at his house, called Farley Hall, toward the close of the hunting season. On the day in which I am now writing, destined to be a memorable day in our calendar, the hounds meet at Farley Hall. Mrs. Fairbank and I are mounted on two of the best horses in my friend's stables. We are quite unworthy of that distinction, for we know nothing and care nothing about hunting. On the other hand, we delight in riding, and enjoy the breezy spring morning and the fair and fertile English landscape surrounding us on each side. While the hunt prospers, we follow the hunt, but when a check occurs, when time passes and patience is sorely tired, when the bewildered dogs run hither and thither, and strong language falls from the lips of exasperated sportsmen, we fail to take any further interest in the proceedings. We turn our horses' heads in the direction of a grassy lane, delightfully shaded by trees. We trot merrily along the lane and find ourselves on an open common. We gallop across the common and follow the windings of a second lane. We cross a brook. We pass through a village. We emerge into pastoral solitude among the hills. The horses toss their heads and neigh to each other and enjoy it as much as we do. The hunt is forgotten. We are as happy as a couple of children. We were actually singing a French song, when in one moment our merriment comes to an end. My wife's horse sets one of his forefeet on a loose stone and stumbles. His rider's ready hand saves him from falling, but at the first attempt he makes to go on, the sad truth shows itself. A tendon is strained, and the horse is lame. What is to be done? We are strangers in a lonely part of the country. Look where we may, we see no signs of human habitation. There is nothing for it but to take the bridle road up the hill and try what we can discover on the other side. I transfer the saddles and mount my wife on my own horse. He is not used to carry a lady. He misses the familiar pressure of a man's legs on either side of him. He fidgets and starts and kicks up dust. I follow on foot, at a respectful distance from his heels, leading the lame horse. Is there a more miserable object on the face of creation than a lame horse? I have seen lame men and lame dogs.